Peter is speaking with John on the terrace of Simon the Zealot's house in Bethany. The conversation is intense, with Peter explaining the need to evangelize in other places in the face of growing persecutions at home. He urges John to join him, but John says he can't come yet. And he says, "Because I realize that Mary's flourishing in beauty and joy is the sign that she feels, already close at hand, her reunion with her son. I mean a total reunion, because the spiritual one has never ceased. This fire of love inflames her, it nourishes her, enlightens her, and it will also abduct her from us at the destined moment, without any pain for her, without decomposition for her body. We alone will be grieved, I in particular. We shall no longer have our teacher, our guide, our comforter, and I shall be really alone." Peter also begins to weep, although more calmly, and in a tearful voice he implores John to inform him, if he can, so that he may be present at her passage, or at least at her burial. "I will do so if I can," says John, "but I doubt it very much. Something within me tells me that, as it happened to Elijah, who was abducted by a celestial whirlwind on a chariot of fire, so it will happen to her. I shall not have time to become aware of her imminent passage, and she will already be in heaven with her soul." "But her body will at least remain here," says Peter. "Also the Master's body remained, and he was God." And John replies, "It was necessary for him that it should be so, but not for her. With his resurrection, he had to give the lie to the Judean slanders. With his apparitions, he had to convince the world that had become doubtful and even negative because of his death on the cross. But she does not need that. If, however, I can do so, I will let you know. Goodbye, Peter, my pontiff and my brother in the Christ. I am going back to her, as she is certainly waiting for me. God be with you." "And with you," says Peter, "and tell Mary to pray for me." "I need not tell her," says John. "She loves you more than a mother by blood. She loves you as the Mother of God. Peace to you, brother. I'm going now." "And I will follow you, if you will allow me. I want to see her once again." "Come," says John. "I know which road to take to go to Gethsemane without being seen." They set out and walk quickly and in silence towards Jerusalem. They go into Gethsemane and descend towards the little house. Mary, who is on the terrace, sees them coming, and uttering a cry of joy, she goes down to meet them. Peter really falls at her feet with his face on the ground, saying to her, "Mother, forgive me." "For what?" says Mary. "Go and be at peace. I tell you that we shall all be together, you, I, the other apostles and deacons, all in heaven near the man God. For what is given to me, I bless you." And as she did with Gamaliel, Mary lays her hands on the head of Peter and traces a sign of the cross on it. Peter bends to kiss her feet. He then stands up, much more serene than before, and he goes away, while John goes back with Mary. At a later time, Mary realizes that the time has come for her to be reunited with her son in heaven, and she tells John of the tremendous jubilation she feels. She sees that John is weeping and asks why. John says, "Because the storm of sorrow is stirring up in me. I know that I'm about to lose you, and how shall I be able to live without you? I feel my heart being torn to pieces at this thought. I shall not be able to stand this grief." You will stand it, says Mary. God will help you to live, and for a long time, as he helped me. Mary reminds John of his strength and the comfort he gave to Jesus when he was dying on the cross. And she says, He will satisfy my only wish, the only thing I want, because love, when it is so complete as to be almost perfect, as is the love of my Son and of God, love achieves everything, even what, according to human opinion, would seem impossible to achieve. Remember that, John, and inform your brothers also of that. In proportion to how you love, God will help you and will make you triumph over everything and everybody. John has calmed down a little and he exclaims, You are like Jesus when he became transfigured on Tabor. You are light, but you cannot stand. Come, I'll help you to lay your tired, blessed body on your little bed. Come and rest. And he lovingly leads her towards the poor bed on which Mary lies without even taking off her mantle. Folding her arms across her breast, closing her eyelids on her kind eyes, bright with love, she says to John, who is bent over her, I am in God, and God is in me. Mary asks John to pray certain psalms and prayers. But before finishing, he notices that Mary does not breathe anymore, although she is still natural in her posture and appearance, smiling and peaceful. With a heart-rending cry, John throws himself on the floor against the edge of the bed and calls Mary. He cannot convince himself that she is no longer able to reply to him. He bends over her face, still fixed in an expression of supernatural joy, and he sheds tears copiously. When the first transport of sorrow is over, John contemplates her at some length. Then he rearranges the room, removing all superfluous furniture. He hurries down to Gethsemane to pick as many flowers as he can and some branches of olive trees with olives already on them. He comes back up to the little room, and in the light of the lamp he arranges the flowers and the branches around Mary's body, as if it were in the centre of a huge wreath. He pours his heart out to her, as though she were still alive. Then, after he has arranged everything, he sits on the stool, placing the lamp on the floor near the little bed, and he contemplates the body lying on it, praying. It is now much later. How many days have gone by? It is difficult to ascertain. If one judges by the flowers that form a crown around the dead body, one should say that only a few hours have gone by. But if one judges by the olive branches already withered, one must conclude that some days have now gone by. But Mary's body is exactly the same as it was when she breathed her last. There is no trace of death on her face or on her little hands. There is no unpleasant smell in the room. On the contrary, an undefinable scent like that of incense, of lilies, of roses, of lilies of the valley, of mountain herbs, all mixed together, remains in the air of the room. It must be dawn, and all of a sudden a strong light fills the room. It is a light like the one that flooded the grotto in Bethlehem at the moment of the divine nativity. Then, in this light of paradise, angelic creatures show themselves, and a dance of sparks bursts forth from their gently moved wings, which emit a harmonious murmur. The angelic creatures place themselves around the little bed. They bend over it, lift the immobile body, and flapped their wings more vigorously, increasing the sound that existed previously. And they go away through a passage opened miraculously in the roof. They take with them the body of their queen. John has been disturbed by the light, by the current of air from the open roof, and by the sounds. He realizes that a wonderful event has taken place. He runs out on the terrace and looks upwards, and he sees. He sees the body of Mary, still deprived of life and completely identical to that of a sleeping person. It is ascending higher and higher, supported by the angelic group. As a last gesture of farewell, some flowers, the ones that John had placed and renewed round the body of Mary, and that have certainly remained among the folds of the garments, rain on the terrace and on the ground of Gethsemane. And the mighty Hosanna of the angelic group moves further and further away and becomes fainter. John continues to stare at that body that rises towards heaven, and, certainly through a prodigy granted to him by God, to comfort him and to reward him for his love for his adoptive mother, he distinctly sees Mary come out of the ecstasy and stand on her feet. And the God love grants a last supreme prodigy to his perfect, loving disciple, to see the meeting of the Most Holy Mother with her Most Holy Son. Splendid and shining as well, handsome with indescribable beauty, he descends rapidly from heaven, arrives at his mother, and presses her to his heart. And together, more brightly shining than two major planets, he returns with her whence he came. His vision over, John's joy now exceeds his sorrow. He thanks God for allowing him to witness the reuniting of Mary and Jesus. Then he gathers up the flower petals and other remnants remaining on the little bed, saying to himself, "They will serve to assist and comfort my brothers, for whom I have awaited in vain. Sooner or later I will find them." He puts the items he had picked up in the chest, closes the lid and says, "Now everything is accomplished for me also. Now I can go freely where the Spirit of God will lead me. I can go. And so the divine word that the Master gave me, so that I may give it to men and teach love. Teach them so they may believe in love and in its power. Now that I no longer have the Master and the Mother to love on the earth, I will go and spread love among the nations. Love will be my weapon and my doctrine, and by means of it I will defeat the demon and heathenism and will conquer many souls. I will thus continue the teachings of Jesus and Mary, who were perfect love on the earth." Jesus says to Maria Valtorta, "Mary, my mother, lay on her little bed and closed her eyes on everything surrounding her, to collect her thoughts in a last serene contemplation of God. Bending over her rest, the angel of Mary was anxiously waiting for the climax of the ecstasy to separate that spirit from the flesh, while the sweet inviting command of God was already descending from heaven. In his turn, John, an earthly angel, bent over that mysterious rest, was watching the mother who was about to leave him. And when he saw that she had breathed her last, he continued to watch her, so that, not violated by profane, curious eyes, she would remain, even beyond death, the immaculate spouse and mother of God, so placid and beautiful in her sleep. A tradition says that only flowers were found in the urn of Mary when it was opened by Thomas. It is a sheer legend. No sepulchre swallowed the corpse of Mary, because there never was a corpse of Mary. That is why there are no relics of the body or of the sepulchre of Mary, because Mary had no sepulchre, and her body was brought to heaven. And Mary says to Maria Valtorta, God placed me, elevated in body and soul, to the glory of heaven, before the patriarchs, the prophets, the saints, the angels, and the martyrs. And this is what God said. Here is the perfect work of the Creator. This is what I created, in my truer image and likeness, among all the sons of men. The fruit of a divine creative masterpiece, the wonder of the universe. This is the witness of my love for mankind, for whom I wanted a perfect organism and a blissful destiny of eternal life in my kingdom. This is the witness that I have forgiven man, to whom, by will of the Trine Love, I granted to be reinstated and recreated in my eyes. This is the mystic stone of comparison, and this is the link of junction between man and God. It is she who takes the times back to the early days and gives my divine eyes the joy of contemplating an Eve as I had created her. And now she is made even more beautiful and holy because she is the mother of my word and because she is the martyr of the greatest forgiveness. For her immaculate heart, that never knew any stain, not even the lightest, I open the treasures of heaven. And for her head, that never knew pride, I make a wreath of my brightness. And I crown her, because she is most holy to me, and so that she may be your queen. In a separate dictation, Mary says to Maria, My sweet Jesus was quite present with the Father when love gave me the third kiss of life. That kiss was so divine that my soul expired in it, gathered up like a dewdrop, drunk in by the sun from the centre of a lily. And I ascended, with my spirit singing hosannas, into the midst of my three, whom I adored and adore like a pearl in a setting of fire. I was followed by the procession of the angelic spirits coming to my eternal birthday, and I was awaited on the threshold of the heavens by my earthly husband, by the kings and patriarchs of my lineage, and by the first saints and first martyrs. Then heaven closed over the joy of possessing its queen, whose flesh, the only flesh among all mortal flesh, experienced the blessedness of glorification. Maria Valtorta writes, I saw most glorious Mary in heaven, alone in the azure of paradise, beautiful as in the Assumption and in all the visions of heaven. The Eternal Father says, This is the woman in whom all hope of salvation rests, for the Church and humanity, in the Mother of the Word who is the Gospel. I got lost in ecstasy in contemplating her. And finally, Jesus spoke to Maria Valtorta of the Holy Year of the Redemption, celebrated in 1933 under Pope Pius XI. He said, Infinite wisdom would love there to be a celebration of the other centennial as well, of the glorious assumption of my mother into heaven, and to have this celebration given a special character to the next holy year. As an aside, it is noted that Maria received this dictation on the 23rd of October 1947. In 1950, an ordinary holy year, Pope Pius XII defined as a dogma of faith the assumption of Our Lady in soul and body into the glory of heaven. Continuing Jesus' dictation, he said, "Hasten the hour of triumph of the woman. She is the foundress of the lineage of those marked with the sign of the servants of God, and she is the chosen one whose dwelling is heaven. Hasten the hour of Mary's triumph over Satan, the world, matter, and death, so that the dragon with seven heads, ten horns, and seven accursed diadems, the seven seductions, will be cast down for a certain period, and Christendom will have time to gather together and fortify itself in charity and faith, and to close ranks as a defence for the final battle. There cannot be a second redemption carried out by me, Christ, but there still can be a redemption to save a greater number of spirits from the coils of hell, that of glorious Mary. In devotion to her lies the secret of the last redemption."